You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Kevin Miller and Tommy Ahlquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
And welcome once again to another episode of Inspire Excellence. Tommy Ahlquist and Kevin Miller, and this is all about the media. I love the media.
This is your world.
Yes.
I'm excited for today's podcast. We've had a few topics on our podcast talking about media and how it's changing.
Right.
Today might be a little different. I think of a lot of feedback we get on our podcast, Kevin, is people saying, hey, that story inspired me. The person behind that story inspired me. So I thought, what the heck? Let's get Don Day on today.
Yep.
And talk about the guy that's disrupting local journalism here locally.
Yeah, and Dante has not only that disruptor tag on him, but he loves traditional media too. And of course, when we think of traditional electronic media, you know, where podcasts originate from, all electronic media originate from radio. So it's going to be a good one.
It'll be a great one. It'll be a great one. So welcome, Dante.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, whenever you're listening. I feel like God, the Truman Show here all of a sudden.
It'll be great to hear a little bit more about you. Before we get into talk about journalism and things that might be very interesting for people, let's talk about you.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about Don. I know a little bit. I've met your father.
You have.
Fascinating artist. Have you met Don's father ever?
I've heard of him. I've seen his work.
Incredible work. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the visual artistry of his photos is incredible, and the style of his photos. Great guy, but very, very artistic.
Yep.
Right. And I understand you've got some people that are a little more traditional in development and traditional business, but your dad kind of broke the mold a little bit.
Yeah, he did. Definitely. I was born and raised here, which is becoming a less and less common thing, I think. And my family goes back. I think I'm the fourth generation to be born in Boise, which is definitely rare. You don't meet a lot of people who were kicking around Boise when it was 25 or 30,000 people. So deep roots here in the Treasure Valley, and have loved growing up here and really find it interesting to watch it grow and change.
Tell us a little bit about growing up here. Tell us about what drove you as a child, and then have you always known you wanted to be in journalism? And what were you thinking when you were going through school? And tell us a little bit about that.
I have. So I was a Borah High kid, go Lions, and grew up in the...
They might win the state championship. That point guard is good.
Have
you seen them play yet?
A good year.
I have, yeah.
That kid can play. He's good.
They've always fielded good basketball teams. The football teams have always been a little problematic, but that's a digression. You asked if I always knew I wanted to be in journalism. Since about the time I was 6 years old, I was like, I want to be a broadcast journalist. And my dad was like, you are crazy. Turns out he was probably right. But that's
so this
okay.
is your artist dad telling you you're crazy.
Yeah. Well, my dad wasn't an artist when I was a kid. My dad actually was in radio sales. And I oddly enough followed in his footsteps later in the career. But I had a step uncle who was on a flight from Denver to Boise in 1986. And the flight crashed after takeoff from Stapleton Airport in Denver. And I didn't know this uncle very well. He was my step-grandmother's son. But he was coming to town to see us. And for anybody who remembers that crash, it was a really big deal here. And I was like 5 or 6 years old. I was pretty young, but remember being glued to the television, watching Channel 2, oddly enough, and seeing how their coverage was different and how they really tackled this. And that fall was actually a really big fall for news events here in the Treasure Valley. We had a couple of people at Channel 7 who were actually killed in a small plane crash out of sight of Sun Valley. And so it was, for me, just an interesting time being very young and sort of seeing this happen. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. For a long time, I thought I want to be on TV. And when I was a kid, I did some news shows at they had a kid news show at Channel 12, which is really not even a channel anymore. Yeah. And I did that. As I went along, though, I thought, you know what? There's this producing thing that's really interesting because you actually get to put this together. You get to be the one that's in charge. And so right after my 18th birthday, which oddly enough is 20 years ago this month, which I hadn't realized until this very moment, I got hired at Channel 7. And it was a pretty cool thing to get to work there and help not start up the website, but really energize the efforts around.
So 20 years ago is when you started at KTVB.
Yeah.
As an
18 year old. Yeah. So Doug Armstrong, which probably a lot of your listeners know, and I know, you know, Tommy, took a chance on me as an 18 year old kid, literally still in high school. And I worked part-time for the first couple of months and then went full-time right after I got graduated. And I worked there for almost 17 years, and did just about everything in that building. In fact, one of my favorite stories was we had an edict that if there was a tornado warning in Boise, we got on the air as soon as we could. And this happened to happen, boy, 7 or 8 years ago here in Boise. And it was a Saturday and there was nobody around but me and a reporter and the person doing master control. And I was like, well, we're supposed to get on the air, so I'm going to go in the control room and punch this up. And so that was kind of the last thing I hadn't done there was done live breaking weather coverage. I remember the director walked in and looked at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know. But I got to grow and do a lot of really interesting and fun things there and really enjoyed that process of learning everything I could about the business and of the industry and news over that time.
If you had to tell me one thing you learned from Doug Armstrong, you had to boil it down. I know there's a lot, but you had to boil it down to one thing, the most important thing you ever learned from Doug. I love that guy. I think he's truly one of the pillars of our community, genuine, authentic, caring individual. But what would be the one thing you'd take away?
His humanity. When you work at a place for 18 years, you make some mistakes. And I have a few without getting into them, but he always saw the best in people, and that was his employees, that were the community partners, that were advertisers, and really took to heart the mission of journalism. He is not a journalist. He did not grow up in the journalism side of the business. He came up through accounting, but he really understood that what the role of a television station like KTVB is in a community is very important. And what journalism means is very important. And I think that really grows from that humanity that he has.
Hmm. You know, Don, you still stay in touch with so many people in television and radio. What type of people are media personalities? I'm sure you have a special insight into what makes them tick.
Oh, Kevin, that was a great question. You know, it's interesting because I think people in the media, and that's an amorphous term, right? So people in the media could be people like you, who I think, I don't know if you would classify yourself as a journalist, but I do.
Thank you.
People like your colleague, I was talking to Michelle Hart, who is on your Light FM station over there at Town Square just last night.
Right.
About her role in informing people and doing things ethically. It can be somebody who's in media sales, which I did for a while here in town. So I think there's all sorts of different personalities as there is with anything.
Is there a common trait though? You're a smart guy.
I'm trying to not say it, but I really think that ego is a big piece of being in the media.
Right.
And I don't know if that's what you're driving at, but you're pushing me to that corner.
No, I just know that you have some special insight because of your years of research, your years of work, and you get to observe. Most people, they perform and they don't think about what they're doing. You're the man behind the scenes. You're Oz.
I don't know about that, but I do think that there's a level of, and I think ego is such a term that can be taken so badly, right? People who are in the media really like to perform, and they like to use their talents, whether it's their likeness, their voice, their writing ability, whatever it may be, to help illustrate something. And, you know, you work in TV news and you get all sorts of types. And I worked with people who really didn't care about the journalism and just cared about being on television. But for the most part, I worked about people who, with people who really cared about the mission of what we're trying to do, what they are trying to do. And journalism has been battered pretty bad in the last few years. Some of it is self-inflicted for sure. I'm a firm believer that the role that journalism plays in society is really important. There's a lot of hand-wringing about what happens at the national level. I'm not super worried about that. I'm mostly worried about what happens in local communities across the country, whether that's Boise, Idaho, or Des Moines, Iowa, or wherever it might be. There's a lot fewer people in this town trying to uncover stories than there were 15 or 20 years ago. People who've been here a while remember that there was a pretty significant spending and travel scandal in Boise City Hall. And every journalist in this town was all over that. Two in particular at KBOI, at the time KBCI, the channel, the CBS affiliate here, led that. But every journalist in town was really looking into what was happening at Boise City Hall. And there was some major issues there. The mayor ended up, you know, out of office and serving some time, and his chief of staff landed in prison. I worry that if there were something like that in a local government in Idaho now, if it would ever even be known, if the public would be aware of what's happening. And I'm not saying that there, that is happening, right? I don't want to make that accusation on any level, but because there are fewer people to dig in and spend time on these things, I think it causes us to have challenges for our democracy to keep people accountable, and to make sure that the politicians aren't the last check on power, right? Who checks the powerful? And I think journalists play a role in doing that.
Well, I'm just going to get right into one of the things that I admire most about you. And I'm sincerely, this is, if you look back at the last 15 years, I mean, you go back to, so 20 years ago, you're starting KTVB, and that's when websites were new.
Yeah. Okay? Right.
Explosive, disruptive technology in the world, not just in media, but in everything. Now go back 10 years, this iPhone is invented, and now we all are connected, literally connected to everything all the time. In every industry, Don, every single industry has had to adapt to, if you look at in our nation's history, if you read about the Industrial Revolution or you read about any disruption, the automobile, it took a long time for that disruption to take place. What's happened to society in America and the world is this technology revolution has accelerated pressures on every business, because normally those changes would take decades and allow for time to adapt. Whereas we're having to react way more quickly as an industry, as people, as companies, all the way down as families. So for me, it's always interesting because we don't control the pace of disruption. We only react to it, right? And sometimes I hear people in the media and journalism whining about this disruption. Well, it's no different than medicine or business or development or radio. It happened.
Yep.
Now we have to adapt. You have new technology, new ways of people accessing information. It's changed. What I love and admire about you is in the middle of this, I would love to hear the story of how you go from this 18-year, very stable career to saying, hey, I'm going to go out and be part of this disruption, instead of just kind of complaining about, hey, it's changing around me.
Yeah.
And so I agree completely with you, the importance of local journalism, it's kind of I was meeting with someone a couple of weeks ago in my office, and I thought, you know how whiny you sound? I mean, you're here, it's all disrupted, you're trying to fund yourself. I get all that. But just like we have to adapt, you have to adapt. And so journalism itself, telling the story, finding the way to fund reporters and journalism, they're going to have to figure out a way to do that and compete against online sales, just like Amazon and Walmart and everyone. I mean, the world is changing.
Sure.
So in the middle of that, here is Don Day in Boise, Idaho, who somehow says, I'm going to leave a really stable job. You could have probably stayed at KTVB the rest of your life.
Probably.
I'm going to leave. I'm going to create my own thing. And I'm going to try to not only reinvent how I fund myself and journalism, but I'm going to do it differently. I can't wait to hear that story today because it's I've never heard it.
Yeah. So, you know, I obviously wouldn't want to disparage a place that I worked at all. And I think if you listen to this whole thing, you just heard me speak pretty highly of KTVV, but I felt like the television industry was the top of the roller coaster. And that isn't, that really isn't just specific to Channel 7 or the TV stations here. They've got some pretty big problems ahead. And we saw the disruption in the print industry and what it's done. The top local newspaper here used to have 150 people in its newsroom, and now it's down to around 30. That's coming for television. And it's happened in a lot of ways. We've seen a lot of incremental cuts here in the Boise Valley. They're trying to shift right now to a subscriber model. So traditionally, as you can all understand, the way that TV news was paid for was by the ads in the breaks. Well, there's fewer people watching, so the ads are worth less. How does that work? And TV stations now get money from
the cable. I'll tell you, those ads are pretty expensive during a campaign.
I'm sure Christy Edmonds would be happy to to digress with me, my old boss. But they're not as much as they used to be because there's just fewer eyeballs. You know, during a political campaign, it pushes up the pressure on inventory, so it drives up the cost of a spot. But they're now getting a slice of your cable bill. So when you pay Cable One or DirecTV or whoever it might be, the TV stations here in the Valley are getting $1, $2, $3, $4 of that bill. And I was just looking at earnings reports today, actually, from some of the big companies, a couple of them that have stations here and a couple that don't. And they had really good years, good political advertising and good, what they call retransmission revenue, subscriber revenue. But anybody who pays attention knows that fewer people have cable, fewer people have satellite. You can go over the top. They're saying, well, it's okay because they're moving. They're moving to Hulu with live TV. They're moving to YouTube TV, and they're still going to get us and we're still going to pay. Yeah, for now. But you can look out and say, well, let's see, you've got Netflix in here, which is this massive company just taking in tons of money from, I mean, do you know anybody who doesn't have a Netflix account or at least a password to their parents at this point, right? But you have Disney on the horizon that is going to launch Disney Plus, which is a Netflix style thing with all of their content. And you think about what they have, Star Wars and Marvel and on and on. They just bought most of the assets of Fox. You have Warner Media, who's going to do the same. And they have HBO and the Turner Channels and the Warner Brothers TV studio. So people are flooding into this space, this quote unquote over the top space. Well, what's left for live? Sports? And if anybody thinks that there isn't going to be a package with sports delivered by a cable connection or via your phone in the next few years, you're crazy. So how does that tie back to local TV? What place do they have in that ecosystem? What do they provide that is unique? It's their local news product. And it's still the top way that Americans get local news. But counting on that and thinking that's going to be the way it is forever, I think is probably foolish. So I, with that long preamble, kind of see this and just felt like it was time to do something new. I went from this place where I worked in the same building for 17 and a half years and just didn't really change and did a lot of roles and moved up into management, but drove to the same place every day. And I went, I'm done. And quit. And they were very gracious and said, is there something else that you could do? Would you be interested in a corporate job? No, I'm out. And after a few months of just really kind of detoxing from a long time in corporate America, I launched Boise Deaf. And I didn't do it with the intent to do it full time. I was trying to launch a digital media marketing business. And was just a little bored because you're trying to get things started and you're trying to meet with clients and it takes time to get things going. And so I started as a side hustle. And people knew me from Twitter for tweeting just kind of what was happening in the development world. And later that fall, I saw this opportunity pop up for a fellowship at Stanford, a journalism fellowship. And I went, oh, that's really interesting. Told my now fiance about it. She's like, you should apply for that. That sounds like you. That's perfect. I'm like, they're not going to pick me. I'm just a, you know, dumb kid from Idaho. And, but I did apply and didn't think a lot about it. Asked some people I trust for letters of recommendation, including Doug Armstrong. And I read them and I went, oh crap, I'm going to get this. Because people just said these really amazing things. And sometimes if you ever want to feel good about yourself, ask somebody else to write a letter about you. Because you never can see yourself for who you are. And to your theme of this podcast of inspiring excellence, I think that's a big takeaway for me. I don't have a good sense of how I'm perceived. And I would imagine that either of you do either. You have a general idea, but do you really know?
A twisted sense, but yes.
Yeah, right. And so that was instructive for me. So I flew down to Stanford in March of what year are we in? March of 2017, and was not super hot on the idea. My business had started to take off and I was trying to make money and I was, this is great. This is going to work. And I flew down to California to interview and was on the Stanford campus and was like, oh, wow, this is an amazing place. It's beautiful, but the people who were around and the conversations that you overhear and the energy there was pretty amazing. And so I went from being like, I don't know if they offer me this, I don't know if I'll take it, to being like, yeah, if this happens, I'm going. And so I was offered the opportunity and I went down and spent 10 months at Stanford from the fall of 2017 to this past summer and spent my time really thinking deeply and studying the challenges that we have in local news. How do we fix it? What are the problems? You know, you talk about there's a lot of whining, and I totally agree with that. Facebook and Google have completely destroyed the business model for news. That doesn't mean that news shouldn't still exist and that there isn't another model, but it's been very difficult to find one that works. People in general aren't super jacked about paying for news online, even though they used to pay for a print newspaper, and that they're very likely right this minute paying money for news from the local TV stations in their market. They just don't really realize it. So getting people to pay for news digitally is a huge challenge. And it's not the only piece of the puzzle, right? There are some other ideas in play, but we have to figure something out. And it's not necessarily, oh, woe is us. Facebook stole our lunch money. We've got to figure out how to get past that because it's not coming back. Facebook and Google are not going to say, you know what, you're right. We're going to shut down and you can have your business model. It doesn't work like that. And so it's a big challenge. That's a really long answer, but you asked me a really complicated question. So you got a long answer.
That's great. You know, Don, when we talk about local journalists today, how has it changed the style of journalists? Just to editorialize, I feel that the style today is it's more about the reporter experiencing it as opposed to the story itself being the star. You agree with that?
I do reluctantly. I think it depends on the person. I think one of the problems that journalism got into is this idea that journalists do not have opinions. They do. Journalists are, I'm going to get heck for this, journalists are generally left of center. That doesn't mean that their coverage is always left of center, but that's their worldview. I'm probably left of center, not on everything. I mean, if you look at who I voted for in the last election, I think it was about even in Idaho between Republicans and Democrats. And I'm willing to say that. I'm willing to be transparent about that. Because I think it's important. I think it's important for people to be able to say, okay, here's where that person's coming from. I can judge their content through that lens. I don't want to name this name, but you got up at a conference a couple weeks ago and listed some journalists and you it said you should follow these people on Twitter. And one of them, you kind of said, you know, I don't know if their coverage is always super fair, but I like following them. And I actually think that there's value to that. in understanding where that person maybe comes from. And for me, I really like that I don't cover politics. It frustrates the crud out of me. So covering development and growth is a lot more fulfilling. There's politics embedded in that, especially lately here in Idaho, I think. And I interviewed the new governor, and but it was focused less on social issues.
So by the way, that was a great, coverage. I really enjoyed reading your interview with Governor Little.
Yeah.
If anyone hasn't seen that yet.
Yeah. It's on Boise Dev. It'll be
on Boise Dev, 4 parts.
Yeah.
Fantastic interview.
Six.
I only got through 4. Sorry. Hey, let me ask you this before you go back though. So I understand what you're saying. I get it.
Yeah.
We're in a red state.
For sure.
You get outside of this little area here, it is red.
Yep.
You go through a Republican primary and you spend your time outside of the Treasure Valley, it is red, 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 red.
Yes.
I agree that journalism all across the state, it's interesting to me, even in some of these rural towns, when it's left of center. The question I have for you then, in a national climate where there's trust eroding for a media and it's, you know, the fake news thing we're in, when you do have, because I agree that journalists are people.
Yep.
They report the news. But don't you see how hard it is, even at a local level, for individuals to hear a report from a reporter who is not just reporting the news, but now editorializing the news with their left views, and how that can just drive you crazy.
Totally.
When most of the media is left, right? I wish that they would at least see the frustration, or frustration's probably the right word. It's something probably a little more than that for me, because they ask, from their point of view, they want everything seen. Hey, there's two sides of every story.
Right.
But as soon as you say, well, wait a minute, you're portraying the left side of that story, they get mad.
Right.
And I don't think they see the hypocrisy in that sometimes. Address that, because I think it is a problem for journalism. And I think nationally, it's obviously a problem. But I think locally here, I think of a lot of the good reporters we have in our state here, they're left.
Yep.
And when you read what
there's
they write.
There's a few to the right, though.
What?
There's a few to the right that might surprise people. But
there's a few.
Yeah.
There's a few,
yep.
But on important issues like education and healthcare, and I mean, they're left,
yeah.
And so then they get frustrated by the fake news thing. But you're like, well, wait a minute, you didn't just report, you just spun it with a left spin, and now you're getting called out on it, and you don't like that. Talk about this, because I think it's a ongoing problem.
Yeah, I think it is too, and I think, you know, I remember those American government classes at Bora. And I remember I had a great teacher who said the best politics comes through compromise. And I always feel that that's true for both politics and for journalism. I think we've kind of gotten ourselves into a place as a country where everybody kind of has their point of view, and that's, they're just going to stick to it. And I try and step back, and I think a lot of my colleagues do, try and step back and say, okay, what is the other side? Does it have merit? You can look at the governor said he believes climate change is real. And that made people go, wait, what? Well, isn't that kind of silly that he broke ranks to a very, very minimal degree, and that turned people's heads? And in my interview with him, I sort of said that, and he, I think, had a look on his face like, why is this a big deal? The same is true in journalism. Journalists should be responsible for thinking about the other side. I think Kevin and Nate Shellman and some other folks play a really important role in providing a counterbalance. The radio hosts in this town have a pretty big impact on what happens. And it's because there's a market for that. Look at the 90s, you know, Rush Limbaugh launched in 88. I think he launched in Boise in 89 or 90 on Kevin's station, and is a force, right? And there are others, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity. There's a reason for that. People were hungry for something different. I tend to think that things really balance out. Not every day, not every moment, and not on every channel. But the amazing thing about this dynamic and environment we're in is that it is no longer the era of three nightly newscasts. We heard from Ted Koppel at Stanford last year, which sounds like a ridiculous thing to say in Idaho, but he came in and he heard from our cohort of fellows. There's 18 of us from all over the world, all different backgrounds that you can imagine, a very diverse group. And he came in with the message that, boy, you know what we could do to fix the media? We could go back to the old days of three guys with newscasts at night. That did not go over well in a room of people who were Black, white, Muslim, white, male, female. It was half males and half females. He yearned for a time where three liberal white dudes controlled the message.
The real question is, what did his hair yearn for then?
Probably, is it still probably definitely yearned for
right,
these.
Right.
But I don't think going back to that time is super healthy. So to answer your question, yeah, there's journalists with a POV for sure. But there are people on the other side. You know, when I call Kevin a journalist, I do that intentionally. I don't think anybody would take Kevin Miller as left of center, right?
Nope. Not in Idaho. No.
I'll just bring her up, but you know, you travel the state. I love using the example of Betsy Russell.
Sure.
You know, you always want to be a pro in what you do, right? Yeah, a true professional. She's a pro. I challenge anyone to read anything she writes, and she writes prolifically. She covers state issues. Most of the time, it is straightforward reporting. It's deep. It has facts. It's, you know, it's driven by policy and decisions.
Yep.
Most of the times it's pretty right down the middle, and, yep, and whatever side you're on, you're going to get information. So refreshing.
Yeah.
So refreshing than to have other mainstream, you know, journalists, you know, interview you and you read it and you go, that's just junk. That was what you wanted to say about an issue. And your interview with me was just to get the platform to say what you wanted to say anyway. I can see, listen, from someone that just went through it, I can see why there's a problem with journalism. And I think there's got to be some self-policing or balance somewhere. There's a lot of challenges. I'd hate to be in the industry right now. You've got technology and how do you pay for it? And at the same time, you know, people are now going around those traditional
totally
stories.
And I mean, I've been amazed. You brought up Twitter in that presentation to the building owners and managers a few weeks ago. And Twitter's penetration in this market, the last time I saw data, was 18%. Most people aren't on Twitter. The news media is on Twitter.
Right.
People who like sports are on Twitter. Other than that, they're not there. I've been amazed in the last few years to see people whose views I knew because I know them as people really start to spill out on Twitter when they're still day-to-day journalists. And I think that can be a mistake. When I say it's helpful for people to know where I come from generally, I mean generally. I don't think you need to know how I feel on every single last issue, mostly because people would be like, this person, their views are a mess. You know, I don't fit into boxes.
Yeah.
When I write about development and growth, I have a certain openness to ideas. I moderate this Facebook group of 5,000 people, and I don't know if either of you are in it, but it is amazing because you have anti-growth people, you have anti-developer people, you have developers, and you have people who are pro-growth. You have people who think that cars should be outlawed, and you have people that think that there's not enough parking at the mall. And so I try and not be the person that imposes my views on the coverage, but listen to the community and try and build consensus. One thing that I say quite a bit as somebody who's a fourth generation Idahoan who's lived here my whole life, there is this idea that we can stop growing. I find that to be foolish. And I have said that we are not going to build a wall at the border, to borrow a phrase, and keep people from moving in from California or Seattle. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
They may or may not build one on the Mexican border, but it's not going to happen in Idaho.
Not if Mr. Gran Torino has his way.
Yes, exactly.
So we have to
build that wall.
We have to work together. And that's the people in the development community. That's the people who don't like cars. We all have to work together to come up with solutions that are workable for everybody. And that's where that compromise piece, I think, is really important.
I love that.
You know, Don, I've been here 9.5 years and I've seen the change in local news. And I know your love is TV news. I think anybody who
used to be.
Well, okay.
I haven't watched in a long time.
Your first love. But
yeah, first love.
You know, Tommy was talking about the grizzled reporters that are mainly in print now. Boise's become a town where this is the people's their first job. Yeah. And, you know, I long for the days of people that this was their second or third job or they made it their home. Economically, is that possible anymore?
No.
We just lost Morgan to Portland.
Yeah. And I don't, Morgan's a good friend of mine, and I wouldn't say that that was probably an economically driven decision. That was a advancement driven decision. But for most people, sure. Yeah.
As someone who loves this area,
yes.
You know, what is better than equity? Paul J. Snyder, I mean, a treasure. That just doesn't happen anywhere. Oh. And then here we have people that, you know, they come in for a couple of years. Hey, I love CUNA. And then they, right. It's a stepping stone. As someone who's a fourth generation Idahoan, as someone who has grown up in the media, your thoughts on just the state of that? It's not the reporter's fault. It's the nature of the business.
It's a major issue. You're a grizzled vet at 9.5 years. I mean, seriously.
I like the grizzled.
Yes, very much grizzled. Yes.
You've been around more than 90% of your colleagues in the news and information space. Longer than any, now that Paul Jay's gone, I think Chris Walton probably is a bit longer, but I mean, that's sad. I look at most of the people who are doing the reporting and they are pretty new. And that isn't to say that younger folks can't do amazing work. I think anybody who saw Morgan Boydston's work would say, heck of a reporter. But you get a lot of people who are fresh out of school, only going to be here for 2 or 3 years. And their eye is on the prize, and the prize is not here. Most folks who go into the TV news area are destined for one of two things, moving up to a bigger market or public relations. And so you think about where their alignment is. If your goal is a bigger market, then all you're focused on is how does my tape look? What's my social media following look like? If your goal is public relations, coverage is probably going to trend a little bit towards making sure that you're palatable to a PR, either a firm or one of the government agencies in town. That's a challenge that nobody's really solved. The number of people here who aren't looking to do that, me, Scott Logan, Cynthia Sewell, Betsy Russell, and there's just not a ton of them, people who are really in this for the long haul. And that causes problems editorially, I think.
Hey, this is going by way too fast, Don. I knew it would with you. So I want to go back to you.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit. So you start Boise Dev. Mm-hmm. Tell us about you, the person behind Boise Dev, Don Day, your goals, what motivates you, what gives you your drive to do what you're doing. Both personally and then why here? Why, what motivates you? Because, you know, Inspire Excellence is our podcast. What would you tell people out there that are either in the middle of transition or thinking about a transition or, you know, looking for a change in their life from someone that's really taking on traditional media?
I love this place. First and foremost, I mean, I can look over your shoulder here and see the snow on the hills. And it is a special, amazing place. And it collects special and amazing people. And so it's that place and the people who live here that really make me super geeked up to get to work and live alongside them. And what I try and do with Boise Dev is to help people understand the change that's happening here. And sometimes it is it's a new, it's a Wendy's restaurant closing. Maybe not super important or earth shattering, but people were curious and want to know what's happening. And sometimes it's 1200 words digging into a library project or a stadium or any number of things. And it's all done from a place of like, hey, let's figure this out. Let's shine a light where there maybe isn't enough light before. And let's really help people understand this community in a way that I felt wasn't happening previously. It's happening more now. I think I'm not the only one trying to cover this because it's really important. We're growing like crazy. So many people are moving here. State in the country.
I think you've started a trend. So it used to be, you know, this was the guy that would look through every application to the city for every project you were doing. And now I think Idaho Press, I think the Statesman. Now, anytime we turn in a permit, we used to not even worry about when you turned in a building permit because no one it was like a tree falling. If no one was around, no one knew. Right now, now we get like three calls. Hey, is that a food court or is that like a, I mean, what is that you just submitted? So it's interesting. I think you have sparked interest in a lot of different.
I don't think anybody looked at the building permits in this town for years. Yeah. And I figured out this is an amazing source of news. There are more people doing it now. And so I think what you're seeing with Boise Dev is a little bit more beyond just that, though that's still bread and butter and people really want to know what the new restaurant is or what Tommy's doing with one of his big empty fields. But there's more to it than that. And so I wrote a story this week about, you know, there's another new hotel being built in downtown Boise. And people are like, didn't we just build like 600 rooms? And can we really, we need another one? And talk to the auditorium district. And sure enough, all that demand got soaked up.
Now that we build our Hilton Garden Inn, we don't need any more.
Yeah. Well, I think you're gonna get at least one more behind you, and probably
just kidding.
More,
then we like them all.
But. Yeah. So I mean, I think it's just a really interesting time, and my drive comes from two places: chronicling the story of this valley from somebody who, to go back to your prayer point, has been around for a hot minute, and two, I think that we have to try new things in the local journalism space. And I'm trialing a few things on Boise Dev, and one thing in particular that really hasn't been done anywhere. And if it works, maybe other people will copy it. If it doesn't, oh well, I tried. But we have to experiment and try new things. And so that's what drives me every day. And Boise Dev is profitable right now. It's got a long way to go to be where I want it to be, but there's promising early signs.
And Don, finally, what inspires you?
Oh, Kevin, that's a great question. I'm just inspired to get up every morning and do my best. I've got on my laptop a little thing that says do good work. And secondly, it's to do the right thing. I had a boss who really preached like we need to do the right thing, but it's not just everybody, I think, generally says they want to do the right thing, but getting to what that right thing is, it's really super important. And figuring out how we actually know what the right thing is and taking action upon that is what drives me. And when I used to manage people, and now I don't, regardless, it is what is the right thing in this individual situation and how does that fit into a larger curve? That's really important to me.
Well, Don, thank you. This has been great. For anyone out there that wants to follow along or join, why don't you give a plug to your site?
Yeah, so it's boisedev.com. There's a membership program that helps support that. And one of the big benefits beyond supporting the journalism is you get a daily newsletter with all the stories that are published that day. And you often get a story that won't be available to the general public until the next day. And almost everything we publish on that site is unique and unduplicated. Sometimes you'll see it somewhere else first, but most of the time we get to it first and dig up something new and put new information into the world.
The way I describe it is if you want the scoop on the scoop before it comes out anywhere else, boisedev.com. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Don, thank you.
Thank you.
And for everyone else, we urge you to strive for excellence.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.